I'm Blair Longley. I'm the leader of the Marijuana Party in Canada, and we've got a couple dozen candidates running this election.
Okay. So this is Isam Zabok, CJSF, the interviewer, and you're Blair Longley, the federal leader of the Marijuana Party?
Right.
All right. Can you actually explain your the party's platform?
Yes, it's a work in progress. The Marijuana Party is in flux because what has happened is all the original reasons for creating the party no longer exist, and so the party has had to change dramatically. Originally in 2000, there were no bigger parties that were clearly and publicly saying some kind of legalized marijuana policy. And so as a single-issue protest party, a lobby group that would get some, you know, free publicity and would raise the issue and force it to be addressed by more of the other parties, it was organized and ran 73 candidates, got 0.5% of the vote, and then in 2004, the party started flying apart, and what had happened is you had the NDP with a vigorous decriminalization policy and the Greens with a hollow legalization policy, and both were bigger parties and, you know, were saying some kind of legalized marijuana. Then you had the people that wanted to support the Liberals because they were afraid of the Conservatives and hoping to get, you know, more inside the Liberals and change it that way. And the original founder and first leader of the Marijuana Party, Marc-Boris St-Maurice, he switched to join the Liberal Party of Canada now. He's working on Frilla's campaign here in Montreal. He no longer has anything to do with the Federal Marijuana Party. And so generally in the last, you know, throughout 2004 up until now, the party's been flying apart with the majority of previous members and candidates joining bigger parties and just scrapping with each other about which one it should be, whether it should be the Liberals or the NDP or the Green. And so what's left is like the radical rump of marijuana militants who don't want to go mainstream, who think that mainstream is the problem, who have a much more radical view about everything else in politics. And, you know, it depends on what aspects of that you want me to get into.
Well, sort of just, I suppose, just the general aspects of what you think is important.
Well, I think what's most important is to face the fact that governments are the biggest and best organized gangs of criminals that can legalize their own crimes. Until you get past the sort of the superficial hypocrisy and lies that they're the good guys, until you get to the point where you realize that the only difference between organized crime and government is that the government is bigger and better organized, you're not going to understand anything. And you can't fix problems unless you know what they are. And so, you know, marijuana becomes like the most extreme example, the single simplest symbol of everything else that's wrong. It demonstrates in a particular way how society is controlled by lies and coercion. And then once you go through that paradigm shift in the way you perceive politics to see that our society is, in fact, controlled by lies, then, you know, you're beginning to be on the right track to try and understand how hard it is to fix it, why it's so difficult and dangerous, why it's getting worse and worse, faster and faster. And you've got the sort of foundation, the radical foundation to at least to begin to talk sensibly instead of joining the mainstream and becoming one of the professional liars and hypocrites about how you're the good guys and how you're going to make things better. And so that's full of, like, details when you talk about marijuana. When you talk about the history of pot prohibition and exactly how it happened and when and why, when you understand all those details about that particular manifestation of dishonesty backed up with violence, then you've gone through this paradigm shift that lets you start looking around at the other issues and, you know, the issues of the election laws, the Constitution, the monetary laws. The monetary laws, are, of course, the worst by far.
Yeah.
Action over banking, the debt engine. It's also inconceivably corrupt that it goes right off the scale. And so it's like the Marijuana Party is sort of struggling to survive now because it's all, you know, had the pieces all fly apart in different directions. And one of the worst things is the way that the laws was changed in 2004 wiped out 95% of our ability to raise money. And we're in a court case right now against the government. And the history of the party and me is that we wouldn't exist. We wouldn't have survived. I wouldn't be leader if we hadn't won court cases in the past. And the only real hope that we have is to win court cases in the future to change the elections law to make it a little less unfair so that we can possibly play in the game. And that's our only real hope. We have no realistic hope of getting elected, but we do exist as a registered party. We have all the powers that a registered political party has, including being able to go to court and sue the government for treating us unfairly. And if we win that kind of court case again in the future, like we have in the past, then there's some hope for the future. But right now, we're just treading water and barely keeping our head above.
All right. Okay, how about this? Your court cases are specifically against just you guys running?
No, there's a long history to this, of course, but the court case is about the funding of politics.
Mm-hmm.
The funding of politics is always the most important issue. It's the issue behind the scenes that controls everything else. You know, the classic law of structural analysis of society, follow the money. The history of the funding of politics is the thing you need to understand as to why the system is like it is. And changing the way it's funded is the only real way that eventually over time you might be able to change the way that it's run. And so what happened is, they tried to clean up some of the corruption by limiting how much money that corporations and unions and so forth could contribute to political parties. And for the big political parties, they substituted that with $1.75 per vote. But they made this arbitrary 2% threshold that if you didn't get 2% in the national vote, then you got nothing. So if you vote for a bigger party, you're giving them money. But when you vote for us, it's worth nothing. And that's... You know, it like chokes me up. It's the fundamental fact that makes it so difficult for us to operate is that a vote for us is worth nothing. And it's deliberately designed to be that way, and it's extremely unfair. And so for us to try and build anything when everything we do just drops into a black hole and we have to start again from zero, you know, there's no future in that. It's like it's a luxury sport that you become a candidate for its own sake because you like to do it, but you don't get any benefit from doing it. Next time, you're worse off than last time. So the 2% court case, all the small parties have joined together to try and challenge the constitutional validity of that law that says that if you vote for a big party, your vote's worth money for them, but if you vote for a small party, your vote's worth nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can change that, if we can win in court, then there's some real future for the party. And then there's other interesting things going on in the election law world with respect to, the fairness, the weight given to votes. If you go to a website like fairvotecanada.org, it's got all the statistics of how creepy the first-past-the-post system is and how it's deliberately designed so a tiny minority can control the majority and how people's votes are not fairly weighted, that there's incredible unfair imbalance in the effect of different people's votes and the real consequences in the system. So you have the unfairness in the voting, and then you have the extreme unfairness in the funding of politics. So the unfairness in the voting, that would take legislative change, and it's like theoretically possible. The Marijuana Party from the beginning had a founding policy of being in favor of more proportional representation. And, some of the bigger parties are in favor of that too. So if you get the right constellation in Parliament, it might actually happen, which would be really surprising, but it could. And then there's all kinds of other interesting changes in the elections laws that are, you know, being debated by the big parties and that might happen. And, you know, you change the rules of the game, you change the game. And so for us, right now the rules are extremely unfair. We can barely play in the game. We're getting wiped out. We hope that we can force some of the worst rules to be fixed by the courts, by, you know, court order saying it's unconstitutional and that it has to be fixed. And we hope that in the legislation, done by Parliament, that some of the bigger parties will change some of the rules in ways that might be better for us. And one of the funniest things is that there's a real huge benefit for the marijuana party that potentially could happen in May of 2006, which would be due to the government not acting rather than acting. So the three things that we're hoping for is, one, court cases, we win, change the election law, we're better off. Two, you know, legislation gets passed that changes the election law, we're better off. And three, this paradoxical one, that if they don't act to reenact Bill C-3, which is originally passed in May of 2004, Bill C-3 has a sunset clause. It automatically ceases to have any force and effect either on May 15, 2006, if Parliament's in session, or if Parliament's not in session, then 90 days after Parliament resumes session. So if we have a very fragile minority government that can't agree on a democratic package of election law reform, which is what happened in the last Parliament, this whole thing is all well known by these guys, right? They're in Ottawa, they spend their whole lives doing this stuff. So they couldn't agree on it. It was too risky. They try and bring forth legislation that fails, and they risk, you know, losing confidence, and the government falls. So to get an agreement in a minority parliament, they can only work on things they can agree on, or else they risk the dissolution of parliament. And so if democratic reform, election law changes, were to stay on the back burner because you had a minority parliament that was fragile and couldn't agree on the kinds of changes that there should be, then automatically, if parliament was in session, Bill C-3 would have its sunset clause kick in, and that would have enormous significance for the marijuana party because it was one of the worst things. It wiped out 90% of our ability to raise money back in May of 2004. So there's this whole pattern of trying to change the election law to make the game be not so extremely unfair, either through changing, you know, by the court action, changing by the legislation, or in this funny, you know, quirky case, changing by government inaction, allow sunset clause to kick in. So for us, that's the sort of the scenario. We're running a couple dozen candidates who are interested in doing it for its own sake, even though that it's a lot of hassle for them and there's no money and no power, that, you know, that they just use up their own resources and get nothing back in return. So we got a couple dozen people who are still doing that, people who don't want to support any of the bigger political parties, and, you know, they want to you know, put forward their position, and like we're essentially like a collective of independents. There's no other policies that we agree on, and no way to make policies because we can barely afford to communicate with each other, much less, you know, sustain the kind of communication that it would require to generate policies. And to generate policies in the circumstances right now would be like a waste of time because it's all, you know,
it's all bundled up in these guys'
circumstance.
Yeah.
So, you know, sort of one of our principles is like very decentralized, enable people to have the powers of a registered party. So, like, what one of the things we're doing is trying to make electoral district associations, which are like autonomous clones of the marijuana party. They're independent registered entities that can do everything that the party can do. And we, in theory, could have 308 of them, and we've got 5 of them so far. And the ones that we do have are not that active. They all have the potential to take advantage of the political contribution tax credit. And if Bill C-3 were to kick into its sunset clause, then this opens up a very interesting area for me, because I've spent like more than 20 years working on the political contribution tax credit. There's like this huge song and dance there that I don't know if you're interested in going into it.
We're kind of running out of time.
Yeah, you know, it doesn't really matter anyway because it's just academic, right? It's like it's only if, May 2006, if they don't get their act together to reenact Bill C-3, then a $10 billion a year loophole in the Income Tax Act pops back open. And we're in the position to be able to take advantage of that loophole, like we were before Bill C-3 was passed. So for me, it's the most important thing. Is I'm hoping that the government continues to be as incompetent in the future as they were in the past.
At least coming up, this is very... you have a good chance coming up now.
Yeah. Government's incompetence is not too far-fetched, I hope. It's not as bad as a lottery ticket.
So, all right.
I don't know. You say you're running out of time. I can talk forever, but...
No, we're pretty good. Would you like to add anything?
It's sort of, for most people, there's only a few ridings in the Vancouver area. You're at Simon Fraser University.
Yeah.
We have a few ridings in the Vancouver area, and, if you don't like any of the big mainstream parties and you want to park a protest vote, we're the best party to park a protest vote with. So, we got four candidates in the general area of Simon Fraser, and if somebody is a voter and they hate the system, then vote for us.
And your policies are still negotiable then?
Yep, each individual candidate is really like an independent. They all agree that cannabis should not be criminal, but past that, it's, their own opinion, and they're free to tell voters whatever they believe and to promise what they think they would do. And, the party will, if it survives and grows, will evolve a much more radical set of, policies to legalize a revolution in the future. But unless we make some of the basic first steps, which I was talking about before,
yeah,
then, it's just all of our policies would be political science fiction and fantasy. They wouldn't have any chance of ever being real. And sure, they'd be fun, but they would just be silly because they would never happen. So unless the election law changes so the vote for us is worth something, we can't build anything. If the election laws are changed so a vote for us is worth something, then we can start to have, theoretically, a positive feedback. We could build the party. We could, develop policies, and we would have the most radical set of policies of any of the other parties, because we start from such a different foundation. We start from the view that marijuana is good, the government's evil, that's why marijuana is illegal. And everywhere from money to to marijuana, we look at the same. It's a whole huge system of dishonesty backed up with violence, and that's what you have to face, and that's what you have to try and deal with. So if the Marijuana Party survives, if the election law changes so that a vote for us becomes worth something, then we'll come back and grow. But if it doesn't, then we'll just continue to wither away into insignificance.
All right.
Okay?
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Longley.
Bye.
All right. This is Isam Zabok, CJSF, and we were just speaking with the federal leader of the Marijuana Party, Mr. Blair Longley.